Is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio. Welcome to Monday afternoon on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here. You heard Elise Glink's voice. She'll be along a little bit later. Of course, Elise is behind thinklink.com. And one of the things I want to talk to her about is the average age of a homeowner. Apparently, it's older than you might think. I don't know. We'll kick that number around a little bit. We usually start on Mondays with the folks from Chicago Inno, and today it's a folk. Not the folks. Catherine Davis is in the studio. Catherine, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve.
Where's Dahlke?
He is in Charlotte at our headquarters, kind of getting the lowdown for what we'll be doing next year.
Is he in trouble?
I don't think so. I think it's a positive.
Oh, well, that's good.
There.
He deserved it. I was talking to Bill and Wendy about Cameo and how they just came into some money. Ryan Burrow in the newsroom made me aware of this sort of scandal Cameo story. So we'll get to that in a sec. Tell me about what Cameo is and why it's significant that it's doing well here in Chicago.
Yeah, so Cameo, they're a Chicago startup, launched last year, and they let you buy video shout-out messages from celebrities. You know, so these aren't like A-listers. They tend to be more like B or C-listers, that are famous on the internet, so on Instagram, or famous bloggers, influencers, people of that sort. And you can buy these video shout outs, you know, either for yourself or for a friend
and
or family.
You can get one for like $5?
Yeah. So depending on the celebrity, they can be as little as $5, but then they also range up to like $1,000.
I don't know who the $5 one is, but he needs to raise his price a little bit.
Maybe you could get on there for
$5. For $5? I don't think so. I think you have to have some appeal, but thanks. That hurt a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's people on there ranging from Brett Favre to Lance Bass and a lot of other people. And
right.
So it's just, you know, an interesting consumer app here in Chicago that we don't often see because this is such a B2B software-based city.
And the story, Jim actually wrote this story, but he goes to pains to point out how important that is. That if a business to consumer does well here, which I'm not sure I understand. I mean, does something like that really set the tone for the rest of the city?
Well, you know, you look at markets like San Francisco or New York, you know, where big tech companies, the social media tech companies, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, those have originated there and have really set the tone for this as a successful tech hub, right? Because those are platforms that everybody uses. It's not just a B2B software that certain companies use and that, you know, mainstream everyday people know about.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So sort of for reputation in a way.
Exactly.
Okay. And so, so Cameo's in a little bit of trouble because some of these celebrities have been reading messages that had hidden anti-Semitic phrases in them, I think, or something like
that? Yeah, so it looks like an anti-Semitic group has been using Cameo, putting in requests that celebrities, including Brett Favre, make these kind of coded messages that are anti-Semitic and, you know, really offensive. And so this has gotten some press over the weekend and late last week, and it looks like Cameo is kind of doing some damage control, trying to, you know, assure users that they're not anti-Semitic, that they don't support these ideals. And
But it's it certainly wasn't Brett Favre. He just was given a message to read. He thought it was to, I think it was retired military people.
Right.
So it's just disgusting what these people are doing. I was trying to find I had a statistic here not long ago. I think they said that in 2017, the Anti-Defamation League says the number of anti-Semitic incidents was up 57%. In 1 year alone. So shame on them. That's too bad. But I wouldn't pay for Brett Favre to say hello to me anyway.
No?
Who would you pay?
Soldier Boy actually sounds pretty interesting.
He's one of the guys who got caught too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so there's that. Check it out, Cameo. It sounds like a perfect gift for someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, with the holidays coming up. Okay. And tell me, we've talked before on the show about Tock. Tock is it started at Alinea, and the it's a problem in the restaurant world that people make reservations and then they just don't show or they cancel them. So for high-end restaurants, Tock requires people to put down a deposit, right?
Exactly.
And it started at high-end restaurants, but now it also picked up $9.5 million in fundraising, and they want to be for everybody now.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Really to cut down on no-shows and to make sure that the restaurants, you know, are using their tables and their space to, you know, the full capacity that they can. Talk really comes in handy. They have expanded, you know, beyond just Michelin star restaurants. Right. They're, you know, used from with wineries now, pop-up restaurants, you know, normal restaurants that we all go to all the time.
When we want to go out to eat, my wife usually goes to Open Table and sees what jumps out at her. So this could compete with Open Table, or that's what they're hoping to do.
Absolutely. I think they want to use this new funding to really grow it, get more, you know, vendors and restaurants on their platform and make it, you know, kind of the go-to reservation booking platform.
And I did not realize that, you know, if you think of it, the restaurants, you know, they want people in their seats. So Open Table or Reserve works well. But then there was a guy at Reserve, or was it Open Table, I think, who got fired for making fake reservations in one of his competitors' names to make him look bad.
Exactly. There's a lot of competition going on between these kind of platforms. And so, you know.
So far today, we're talking about good ideas and unfriendly people. Catherine, tell me about this new, is it a new company?
Nibu.
What's going on with the name of this company?
Well, you know, it's actually Hindu for lime. Which is what the founder told me, kind of just like a inside joke with his family.
Really?
Yeah.
So there were a lot of marketing meetings coming up with this.
Yeah,
exactly. But it's Nibu spelled...
it's spelled in Hindu, so K-N-E-E-B-U.
But small K, it's a small K.
Well, you know, that's startup branding.
Right, so it's a small K, and then everything else is capital letters. Nibu.
Yeah.
And the idea is if I want my house redesigned or if I want my lawn mowed, whatever I want, I go to Nibu?
Yeah. So basically it's aiming to be a one-stop shop for, you know, gig economy services that have to do with taking care of your home. You know, so they do anything from interior design to like a plumber to dog walking, snow plowing services, etc. You know, and there's a lot of gig economy platforms out there already that do these things, but usually just one, you know. Right. So there's WAG for dog walking, or there's Snow Hub for snow plowing. But Nibu really wants to be the place you can get all of these things done on the same app.
So I would imagine one of the hurdles then, if you're trying to provide so many services, that you've got to find a lot of service providers.
Exactly. And so, you know, they just launched. I mean, their app went live in October, and so far they only have about 20 to 25 providers, even though they want to eventually offer 45 services, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, right now I think the company is focusing on getting providers, getting users, kind of getting the word out there, and, you know, getting the usership in general.
How much cash does Nibu make out of this?
They take 10% of every provider's earnings. So of every transaction, they get 10%.
All right. So if you were 12 years old and you wanted to start a lawn mowing business,
this could be a good place to do it.
Do they do background checks and all that stuff too?
They do. Yeah. They work with an outside kind of, you know, a security firm that does background checks for them, similar the way, you know, Uber or other ones do it.
Another story you wrote had to do with Kraft Heinz, and they've got a food. Is it an incubator here?
So it's a venture fund, actually. So is a new $100 million venture fund called Evolve Ventures. And, you know, Kraft Heinz, obviously, a big food conglomerate. And to stay ahead and stay profitable, they need to, you know, incorporate more tech into their business. So this is kind of their way of, you know, finding tech companies that are disrupting the food industry, either adopting their technology, investing in them, you know, kind of just keeping tabs on it.
And they talked to you quoted someone here in the article saying that Chicago is a food hub when it comes to business. We were talking earlier about B2B startups. Chicago is considered a food hub. Why is that?
Well, you know, we have these big legacy companies like Kraft Heinz, first of all, kind of leading the way. But then also in the last few years, we've seen a lot of food startups come. So, you know, there was RX Bar, and they were just acquired last year for like $600 million, you know?
Right.
And now we have, you know, Tovala making a kitchenware device, and we have Quavos making egg white chips, you know, there's just kind of a lot of innovation going on here around the food space. And then along with Grubhub, you know, another big tech story that was really great.
How big of a story is it that Salesforce is coming here? We talked about that on Friday, but you know, I don't know if it's. I'm curious of what you think as far as the impact. I mean, it's not HQ2 or anything like that, but it's 1,000 people and it's a real forward-thinking company.
Exactly. You know, I think coming off the heels of not getting Amazon, Salesforce is kind of the next best thing, right? You know, they already have a pretty big Chicago presence. They already employ like 1,000 people here. And now they're going to bring 1,000 more jobs and have a big new tower on the riverfront. And I think that this is significant because it kind of puts us on, you know, as we try to get to that top tier tech hub,
right,
this helps us compete with cities like New York or San Francisco that have these kind of companies building these additional headquarters.
That's Catherine Davis. You can read more at ChicagoInno.com. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. All right, you go to the grocery store. Where do you go first? Do you tend to go to maybe a Costco or the Jewel, the old-fashioned supermarket, Aldi? There is a fight for your dollars, and some of those stores known as hard discounters may be eating away at the traditional stores. On a phone line now is J.B. Steenkamp, who has written a book on the topic. The name of the book, Retail Disruptors, The Rise and Fall of Hard Discounters. J.B., welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
All right, so who are we talking about when we talk about hard discounters?
Well, we're talking about stores 10,000 to 15,000 square feet, small assortment, 2,500 or so, mostly private label and significantly cheaper than other ones. But the title of my book, the second point, is not the rise and fall of hard discounters. It is the rise and continued success of hard discounters.
So you think that they're here to stay?
They are here to stay, and actually they are currently in vast expansion. And in the Chicago area, Aldi, after Jewel, has already the second number of stores, and probably it's going to be that they have the largest number of stores in the Chicago area in the next few years.
Say that again. You're saying Aldi is going to be have the most presence here in Chicago in a few years?
Yes, they have now slightly a few only less stores than Jewel Osco, but whereas Jewel is, let's say, is struggling a little, certainly in terms when you look at how American consumers think about Jewel in terms of satisfaction, is not so good, and mm-hmm. Aldi rates very well. So Aldi is on a very aggressive expansion program right now. So yes, you will see more of it.
It's kind of interesting because there's the bargain shopping, but then there are sort of, well, I'm not going to call them boutique, or I'm not even sure higher-end stores is the right word, but I think of, you know, like a Mariano's seems to be at a higher end than a Jewel. So does either end succeed and the middle fail, or how does all that fit together?
Yeah, I think what we'll see is that the number of stores that are stuck in the middle, they don't have the really low prices that Aldi has or the really superior assortment or in-store atmosphere that some of the upscale stores offer. Whole Foods does also a fairly good job in this respect. These stores in the middle, they suffer the most.
And Whole Foods is interesting, too, with its partnership with Amazon, right? That's got to, I would imagine, be bringing people in who might not otherwise be shopping there.
Yes, although actually there is a lot more buzz than there is real action. So after the first flurry of excitement kind of died off, and the number of new visitors to Whole Foods has leveled off. And I've done some price analysis comparing Whole Foods with Trader Joe's, for example, and honestly, Whole Foods is still very expensive. Although they are, and sometimes they have some nice deal, but Whole Foods remains very expensive. Yes, we will see more action from Whole Foods, but the real aggressive action comes from the hard discounters and not from Whole Foods.
Is Trader Joe's considered a hard discounter?
Yes, it's our discounter. You know, about 80 to 90% of Trader Joe's assortment is private label, and they're also much cheaper. But Trader Joe's is a hard discounter at the upscale level. It sounds a little bit like a contradiction that Trader Joe's competes with Whole Foods.
No, I get that because you talked about the atmosphere of the higher-end stores, and, you know, what are you buying there, really? You're buying a feel when you go in. And Trader Joe's, even though they're cheaper, they tend to provide that feel, too.
Well, I think, actually, it is still not nearly as great a feel that Whole Foods does. And we have a Trader Joe's here, and they go there a lot, but it isn't the Whole Foods atmosphere.
But it is sort of a distinct atmosphere. You don't feel like you're going into a discount store.
That's correct. Yeah. That is because they treat the personnel very well, they pay them very well, and actually these people, you get a feel that they really like to be there.
So if you're Jewel, if you're running the Jewel chain, what do you do to fend these people off?
Well, I think, honestly, I do not think that Juul can easily compete on pricing. The way for Juul to do is to really improve this in-store atmosphere, including training of people, and so that the people they have good customer service. Juul also, for interestingly, rates low on aspects like checkout speed. Well, that is something that can be done very quickly. Produce quality, according to American consumers, is not so good. So something can be done around those things. Meat, poultry quality is not so good, so they need to improve their operation. And so these are three very clear points that American consumers say, you know, we are not really satisfied with what Juul has to offer.
That is J.B. Steenkamp, a professor of marketing at the University of North Carolina. J.B., thanks for joining us today. I'll see you at the Aldi.
My pleasure. Thank you. I see you there.
Okay. Bye. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Whoever said buying a media company was easy has clearly never tried to buy one. Just look at Sinclair Group, who tried to buy our parent company, Tribune Media, before regulators stepped in and the deal fell apart earlier this year. However, it looks as though the Texas-based Nexstar thinks they've learned from the deal and they're going all in. Tribune Media is officially getting bought out by Nexstar for $4.1 billion. They currently operate 174 television stations around the country and hold roughly 39% of the U.S. TV market. And earlier last week, Salesforce set a few details in stone with the city of Chicago as they announced they'll be adding 1,000 new jobs over the next 5 years, all at the Wolf Point office location. But hopefully you're patient, because the Wolf Point building won't even be built until 2023. And if you're a pessimist, you don't think of this as a great idea, think of it this way. We're 1/25 of the way to the number of jobs that Amazon will bring to one of their new HQ2 locations. And quite honestly, it probably costs the city much less to do so. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. On a phone line now is Elise Glink, the person behind Best Money Moves and ThinkLink.com and all sorts of stuff. I get a newsletter from ThinkLink.com every Monday morning, and I enjoy reading that and coming up with varied reasons to talk to you. Elise, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Nice to be here.
Okay, so I was reading this study from LendingTree, and they talked about the average homeowner is 54 years old. And I'm not sure what to make of that. What is that? Is that old? Is that young? It seems to me like it's right in the middle.
So it's kind of interesting, right? What we've seen is that the average age of a homeowner has crept up quite substantially over the last 10 years, and that's because millennials have been so late to get into the marketplace, right? So the average age of a first-time homebuyer, right, and you can imagine that this would drive your averages and your medians, the average age of a first-time homebuyer 20, 25 years ago was about 26, 26 and a half.
Okay.
Today, it's about 34.
Really?
7 years.
And
yep.
And that is because they don't have the money, they're not interested, or what's behind that?
Yes to all of the above. I'm not sure about the interest, but certainly, what happened coming out of the Great Recession 10 years ago delayed a lot of people's home buying plans, especially young people, because it took them so long to get jobs. The jobs they got didn't pay what they should have been paying or what they needed them to pay. They were living at home. And so there are all these different reasons that millennials have kind of time shifted their lives 7 to 10 years and all the major milestones. And so buying a home, you've got all that student loan debt that they've piled up, and there's credit card debt. All of that really has pushed the age of a first-time home buyer up by about 7 years or so. And that, of course, has been raising the median or average ages past, I think it was about 49, 50, and now it's 54. And we're seeing in some neighborhoods, of course, like if you're in Florida, it might be
right.
63 years old. But
seven of the top,
overall,
seven
it's
of
about mid-50s.
Yeah, 7 of the 10 oldest cities, I think, in Florida. Kind of funny that the two youngest cities are in Utah, Provo and Ogden. Do you know why that might be?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Utah has been a place where people from California, young people, tech industry, are moving. They used to go to Denver, and now they're going back to Utah because the cost of living is so low, relatively speaking.
It's funny. My daughter is working for, well, she was working for a, a, a marketing firm in L.A., and they were headquartered in L.A. and in Utah. So maybe that's part of it. Interesting. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the other thing that's driving is this is the attraction to a millennial workforce. Utah and Denver and other places that have great natural resources, beautiful recreational and accessible recreational facilities, that is a really important thing to millennials. So they not only want to be able to afford their houses, they want to be able to afford to go skiing on the weekends.
So if we're getting older, if millennials aren't buying the homes as young, I would imagine that means there are fewer home buyers out there, and perhaps is having an impact on what the home sellers can get for their house.
Well, we're starting to see the markets turn, and this is something that everybody should pay attention to here in Chicago, because we never benefited, like all the other 20 biggest metropolitan areas, from the boom that started to happen in 2013, 14, and 15 around the country. We didn't benefit from that. We still have a very high number of homeowners who are functionally underwater, meaning that their homes are worth about, what their mortgage value is, or maybe even slightly less than that. And so if they tried to sell, they'd probably have to bring cash to the closing. We're starting to see the market in Dallas turn. New York is starting to turn. San Francisco a little bit is starting to turn. And by that, I mean there are actually fewer buyers out there, to your point. And so sellers are getting worried, and they're starting to soften prices, lower their prices to get the market generating demand.
So if we were late coming to the recovery, or maybe missed the recovery altogether in some ways, it's not so good if the recovery's over.
Well, it wouldn't be, and I don't know how this is all going to play out. I wish I had a crystal ball for the umpteenth time in my career. But, when I look around Chicago, there are pockets of places that are doing okay. But there's also places where things are not going well. And, part of that time shifting that we talked about with millennials is they're pairing up in sort of a permanent partnership, whether that's, marriage or a long-term relationship, having children, which they seem less inclined to do, and then move to places where you have great school districts. So we've talked a lot about how, housing in the North Shore, and I know Dennis Rodkin is a frequent guest, and talks about this, where, in the North Shore and the western suburbs and northwest suburbs, places where you have very wonderful school districts are not attracting the kinds of young millennial families that they once did, because they want to stay in more urban, diverse neighborhoods. And that has put tremendous pricing pressure out there.
That is Elise Glink. You can read more at thinklink.com. Sign up for the newsletter. Elise, thanks for coming by today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks, Steve.